From the studios of Boise State Public Radio, I'm Gemma Gaudette. For people who have been waiting for a more traditional COVID-19 vaccine, health experts say the Novavax vaccine may be for you. Regulators late last week authorized the nation's first so-called protein vaccine, and this week the CDC gave it a thumbs up. Joining us today to talk about that, plus other COVID-19 issues, is Dr. David Pate. He is the former CEO of St. Luke's Health System, as well as a current member of Idaho's Coronavirus Task Force. And remember, if you have a question, send it to us. Send us an email, idahomatters@boisestate.edu. Welcome back to the show, Dr. Pate.
Thank you, Gemma.
Okay, let's talk about this Novavax vaccine, Dr. Pate. What is it exactly? And why is it considered a more traditional vaccine?
Yeah, good question. So first of all, it's considered more traditional because we've used some of that technology before. So using a protein to stimulate the immune system, it goes all the way back to the hepatitis B vaccines, which lots of people have received. It's also used in the pertussis or whooping cough vaccine. It's been used in the influenza vaccines. So this is a technology for those who are concerned that, well, mRNA is just too new, so I'm afraid to take it. This would be something you should seriously consider. The difference is that the mRNA vaccines, so we're talking about like the Pfizer, the Moderna vaccines, there we inject a piece of mRNA, messenger RNA, which gives the cell the code to produce the protein that then the body responds to and makes antibodies. In this case, what we're doing is we're not injecting any genetic material. We're just injecting that protein that the mRNA vaccines get the cells to make, and we inject that protein and let the body respond directly to that. So even though the mRNA vaccines are very safe, they don't mess up your genes or any of those kind of things that have been spread around. If that's still a concern to you, then Novavax would be a great option.
And is it as effective as what we've seen so far, or do we know?
It appears to be, Gemma. The problem is most of the studies of Novavax occurred last year. There's been a real delay in getting it approved for a lot of reasons. And so we don't have as much data of this use of this vaccine against the various Omicrons, but there has been some testing of that. And I do think we'll see more results published very soon. But the results that have been released so far suggest that it is probably at least as good as the mRNA vaccines, although, you know, I'm not ready to make that a pronouncement yet.
So can we also chat a little bit about nasal vaccines for COVID? Now, some health experts are saying that they may end up actually being more effective in fighting off the disease than just getting the shot. But with that said, what do we know about these vaccines, and when could we even see that as an option?
Well, I'm very excited about this prospect. And you may recall I brought this up before, that the nasal vaccines offer some promise of complementing what the current vaccines do to give us even stronger protection. So let me explain a little bit about that. First of all, nasal vaccines have actually been used in veterinary medicine quite effectively. So for example, if you have a dog that gets the Bordetella vaccine, which all dogs are supposed to, you know, they just shoot some liquid up the dog's nose and probably your dog sneezes on you and stuff, but that's a nasal vaccine. We have more limited use of nasal vaccines in humans, where we used the flu mist with influenza, especially for kids. You know, it was not quite as effective, so we're still learning. And this is an area where we need our government to invest in this. So why would a nasal vaccine be any different or better than the current vaccines? And I don't think it's an either or, I think it's both. In other words, the current vaccines that we give, the shots, they clearly help protect you from getting severely ill if you do get infected. The problem that we're responding to is the fact that even though people are vaccinated, a lot of people are still getting so-called breakthrough infections where they get infected. Now, understand that even our current vaccines do reduce the chances of you getting infected. You are five times less likely to get infected if you have the current vaccines than if you are unvaccinated. So it does help, but it's not perfect. The idea behind the nasal vaccine is that if we can stimulate an immune response at what is called the mucosal level, the lining of your nose, your respiratory tract, where the virus is naturally making its entry, that will stop the virus even earlier. It's kind of like putting up a roadblock, if you will. And so, which the shots don't give you as good as mucosal immunity, which is really a different kind of immunity. It particularly relies on an antibody called IgA, which we haven't talked about much because you don't get as much with the shots, but this could be very complementary. I'm very excited about it. The disappointing thing is I think it's going to be quite a while till we have them. Early studies are showing promise, but they're early. And so unless our government decides to take the same kind of approach as the Trump administration did in accelerating these vaccines, they're probably not going to be available to us for a couple of years.
Oh, wow. I mean, because it, from what you've said and what I've read so far, is that because of where this vaccine would enter, as you mentioned, like in your nose, your nasal passages, I mean, your throat, I would assume with the virus being airborne, you'd get like a stronger response right in that area where you're going to get, where probably you're going to get the virus.
That's exactly the premise, Jim. And there is some early evidence to suggest that this is the case. This vaccine is much further along in some foreign countries. It's really a matter of would Congress be willing to fund and expedite these nasal vaccines the same way we did with the first vaccines. Unfortunately, I think that with where Congress is today, I'm not so sure Congress is kind of over COVID the same way as a lot of the public is. And it's too bad because, we've shifted from initially our concern was people dying from COVID. Well, we can in large part prevent that with the current vaccines. But what would be the tremendous advantage of having the ability to really prevent infection at all is that we now eliminate the concerns about long COVID and many of the mm-hmm. other longer term illnesses that we are already seeing.
And now let's talk a little bit about folks being eligible for a second booster shot. Right now, unless you're immunocompromised or 50 and older, you're not eligible. However, it sounds like we might be on a bit of a faster timeline to get this second booster available for people under 50. What do we know about that so far?
Yeah, so what we know is that the White House seems to be in favor of that approach. Now, generally, these decisions are made between the FDA and the CDC. And so a lot of the studies that have been done that showed that, in fact, the second booster would give a particular benefit has been in older individuals. So the question is, what do we do for those that are less than 50? Because we've demonstrated a clear benefit for people over 50 and particularly those over 60 or 65. But the question is, you know, again, the focus has shifted from trying to prevent hospitalization and death, which we still need to do, but we also, for so many reasons, we need to prevent infections. And so you look at these people under 50, and they are people that are getting infected. In fact, they're getting reinfected. And then they are infecting people that are at higher risk. And so if we want to contain the transmission in order to decrease the number of variants that we keep seeing and the rate that we keep seeing them at, and if we want to decrease these long-term health consequences, then really a great public health strategy is to give a second dose to those under 50, not because you're going to make a huge difference in whether they end up in the hospital or die, but we're going to help stop the transmission. Because frankly, Gemma, I mean, this wouldn't be an issue if everybody was willing to wear masks and high quality masks and do that during our surges, but they're not. And so we just really don't have a whole lot of other tools.
Dr. Pate, we've got some questions. And Marlene wrote in saying, I keep hearing about how contagious the BA.4/5 variants are and how they are evading our vaccine protections. So I've started wearing a mask indoors again. If that's the case, I'm wondering why the results from the Boise wastewater testing show that the levels have plateaued instead of rising as in previous surges. So what can you tell us about that?
Well, Marlene, that's a really good question. So, you know, first of all, I want to just point out wastewater doesn't give us a perfect correlation, but your observation is one that I also have made and questioned. But, you know, what I think we need to do is we need a little bit more time. Here's why. You're correct. BA4 and BA5 are, by all evidence we have, far more transmissible. However, what they've been increasing very quickly. And what I think the wastewater may represent is we've really had four variants circulating. And so I think a lot of that may be BA2.1.2.1 infections. I'm not sure that we've seen the full impact of BA5 yet. And so that's to say, are we possibly going to see, just as you pointed out, that it looks like it's plateauing, but will it go down, which is my hope, or may we see another sharp increase, even though it's plateaued, because it plateaued due to BA2.1.2.1, and now we're going to have BA5. I don't think I can answer your question for another couple weeks, but it's a great observation, and let's keep an eye on it.
Dr. Pate, Josh wrote in, and he says, I listen regularly to your appearance on the show, Dr. Pate, so this question stems from some of what I've heard in the last few weeks. So Josh says, if BA.5 is the most infectious variant yet, and having contracted a previous variant of Omicron offers less protection than being vaccinated, why aren't we seeing a surge with a vertical rise like we did in January when Omicron arrived? Based on the data I've seen, our vaccination rate is only about 5% higher now. So could it be that we actually are in a big surge, but testing is so significantly reduced that it's not being documented? Or perhaps do we just have less to worry about?
Well, I think certainly your theory is possible, and that we're just not getting a good measurement of how many infections we're truly having. So that's one possibility. What I worry is really kind of what I was just telling Marlene, is that what we have seen so far with our rising cases has been BA2.1.2.1. And so that's why it seems to have been a little lower surge than what we've seen with previous Omicron waves, because that one doesn't have the degree of immune evasiveness, and it's not as transmissible as BA5. And that what we're going to see is that we're kind of being lulled into thinking, okay, we've reached the top, it's going to come down, this wasn't so bad, but then bam, we could have the BA5. I don't know if that's going to happen, but I don't think we can rule anything out yet. We need more time to watch this. So I think your theory could be correct. I think my concern could be correct. I just don't know until we get more time and more data.
Jason just wrote in and he said, Dr. Pate, do the second boosters cover new variants of COVID?
Yes. To the extent that they clearly seem to increase your neutralizing antibodies. And neutralizing antibodies appear to be a very important factor, both in making sure that you don't get infected, and if you do, that you don't get as sick. There's much more to it than that, but our evidence suggests that yes, getting that second booster will give you additional protection, yet, just as like what we talked in the previous segment, while it appears to give you a significant, even more boost in protection from severe disease, it does not necessarily prevent you from getting infected. And my concern at this point is to prevent people from getting infected because of those long-term health consequences. So yes, there's a booster, there's a benefit to that second booster, but it is certainly not perfect. There is still immune escape to some degree. And so there is still risk of getting infected, even if you've got your second booster.
And Dr. Pate, can we talk for a moment about, and I know we've touched on this before, but can we talk a little bit about these reinfections of COVID and the concern around that? I mean, is there like a safe, and what I guess safe is, you know, whatever that means to you. But I mean, is getting infected like once or twice kind of maybe okay? Or is it, you know, when you get to that third time, that fourth time? I ask this because, I mean, I've heard of people getting infected, you know, the fourth, the fifth time. It's kind of like, well, it is what it is now, and we just keep getting reinfected.
Yes, and I'm concerned that there's a lot of cavalier attitude about this. Frankly, even in some of the, you know, higher public health levels, the CDC, the White House, others. I just don't think there's been enough attention to this. So let me tell you what we know about reinfections, and we certainly don't know everything. Here's what we know. If you have been relying on natural immunity, you have less protection than if you are fully vaccinated and especially boosted. And there's some immunologic reasons for that that are probably too complicated for me to go into right this moment. But so you're better off if you're vaccinated. Second, if your natural immunity is based on an earlier Omicron infection, so you got infected at the beginning of the year with BA1, you got infected in April with BA2, you got infected in May with BA2.12.1, those aren't going to provide you much, if any, protection against BA5. Those Omicron strains are not as what we call immunogenic. They don't produce a very strong immune response, and therefore you don't get as much protection. The next thing that we know about reinfections is they are most likely to occur when a new variant of concern is on the rise, which is what we've been seeing now. So this is a time where we see lots of reinfections. Once surges go down, we tend not to see many reinfections. Another thing that we've learned about reinfections that was different than what we thought is you may remember early on that the CDC's definition for a reinfection was a documented infection more than 90 days from the first one. We now know that people commonly get reinfected in as little as 3 to 4 weeks. And again, it is more likely to occur when we have a new surge. Another thing that we've learned is you are more likely to get a reinfection if your first infection was mild. So all those people thinking this is mild, you are some of the ones that are most at risk for a reinfection. Finally, there was a common notion that has prevailed that reinfections are milder. They are in some individuals. However, if you look at all reinfections, what we do find is that each infection tends to decrease the health of that total population. That doesn't mean everyone who gets reinfected, but if you look at it at a population scale, reinfections are bad for your health. And the chances that you'll develop problems increase with each infection. What one study recently that's helping us try to understand this is it looks like one of the reasons why reinfections are so problematic with this virus is this virus actually causes temporary damage to your immune system. And one study recently showed it probably takes 8 months to recover from that. So Wow. Yeah, if you're getting reinfected once a year, that's a whole different story than if you're getting infected 2, 3, 4 times a year.
That's really good information to know, though, Dr. Pate, is, you know, that timing, right? Because it seems like it may be inevitable to maybe, as we move through this, to not get infected, but take care of yourself, take precautions, so maybe you don't get infected often.
Yeah, the more you can prevent getting infected in the first place, and the longer you go, the better. And then the more you can prevent getting reinfected, or the longer you can go, the better.
As always, Dr. Pate, I want to thank you so much for talking with us today. Dr. Pate will, of course, be back next week. So if you do have questions for him, email us, idahomatters@boisestate.edu. And Dr. Pate, as always, like we said, thank you so much for your time, for giving us this information. It's always so critically important as we continue to move through this.
My pleasure, Gemma. Good to talk with you.
Always good to talk with you.